ComingToBook.com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here in the Bettors Box. This is BettingBook.com's MLB betting podcast for Monday, August 1st. Happy to have you with me here on Trade Deadline Day. A lot of things going on, lots of things to monitor here in the world of Major League Baseball. And, you know, it's been a very interesting morning so far. A lot of rumors popping up. And, you know, I tried to set the show back a little bit here today, do it a little bit later, see if some more news had broken. But, you know, also need to make sure that listeners can get this for the Monday night games. So with that, here's our recording for today's show. We'll have regular one-hour Bang the Book Radio broadcasts coming up here the rest of the week, including Friday. We'll not have a Bettors Box on Friday. We'll have full one-hour shows throughout the week. But I will talk Major League Baseball on every show, so rest assured that you'll still get plenty of coverage of what happened post-trade deadline and then also on a day-to-day basis here with Major League Baseball. My apologies, feeling a little bit under the weather here today. So if my thoughts are a little bit jumbled, if I don't sound particularly good, now you know the reason why. But I guess we'll go ahead and look at the deals that have been completed so far, because there's really no point in speculating too much as it pertains to tonight's Major League Baseball card. However, that being said, there certainly are some moves that could change some things here for tonight. And I'll talk about that a little bit here on today's show. One of the big ones here, Washington Nationals have picked up a closer. That is Mark Melanson from the Pittsburgh Pirates. They give up left-handed pitchers Taylor Hearn, also Felipe Rivero. Rivero, a guy that could be an interesting little addition to the Pittsburgh bullpen. He's a lefty, more than a strikeout per inning guy, a guy that has a chance to, you know, be a decent medium leverage reliever for the Pirates. But the big thing here is Melanson going to the Nationals. They pick up that back-end guy that they need. And look, when you look around the National League here for the postseason that's coming up, really a dominant team outside of the Cubs. You've got both the Nationals and the Giants, 61-44. You've got the Dodgers there in the mix for the wild card. Miami also in the mix. St. Louis in the mix as well. The Mets sort of on the fringes now, but we'll see. They've been rumored to be picking up Jay Bruce here today. We'll see if that deal comes to fruition. But if you're going to take a shot on anybody in the National League, you've got to go with the Washington Nationals, in my opinion, because you've got a starting rotation of, you know, Steven Strasburg is there, Gio Gonzalez is there, Tanner Roark is there. They've got the guys that you need in a short series to be able to have a lot of success, and now they've got the bullpen for it as well. They were very good in middle relief and setup roles. Papelbon was the weak link of this bullpen. Now they've got Melanson, and we'll see what they do with Jonathan Papelbon. We'll see if he's able to slot, you know, into a setup role, if they use him in medium leverage and low leverage situations. You'll have to see how that whole dynamic plays out there for Dusty Baker's team. But really the only guy I don't like about Washington is Dusty Baker. And we'll see, you know, if he can slay some of those playoff demons that he had with the Cincinnati Reds. But I feel like if you're looking for a National League team to go up against the Cubs, the Washington Nationals are the one that you would look at. And I really do like this deal for them because it solidifies the back end of the bullpen. And there's been a lot of talk here at the trade deadline about relievers. Some of them have gone and been traded. Others have gone off the market. It's like Colorado not going to move Boone Logan now as they're playing really well after the All-Star break. So, you know, teams are actively looking to shorten games. Washington now has the capability to do that. And that's a very, very good move for them. Another deal, the Royals picked up Billy Burns from Oakland for Brett Ebner. Just a different fit, a change of scenery. I really don't think Kansas City is anything you have to worry about now, being 12 games out in the AL Central, 8.5 on the wild card. Their season is over. Really, the most unfortunate thing for them is that Wade Davis got hurt and they weren't able to salvage anything out of this season because they could have traded Davis, really taking advantage of the market that's out there right now. Matt Kemp goes from San Diego to Atlanta in exchange for Hector Oliveira. This deal strictly because of money. You've got the Padres looking to save some cash. They did that. They moved Kemp to Atlanta. Now, Atlanta, of course, can try to trade Matt Kemp here down the road. And we've seen some teams kind of do this in rebuilding situations. Atlanta's done it. They picked up Lucas Harrell basically off the scrap heap and then traded him for a lottery ticket to Texas. Now they do it with Kemp, something I think could benefit them going forward. And, of course, you know, that's kind of the way that John Hart and Coppola are looking to move this thing in the right direction there in Atlanta, is by getting some of these guys, picking up veteran players and hoping to get something for them, We saw him do it with Juan Uribe last year. They probably were looking to do it with other guys like a Nick Markakis, for example, but the market just not really there. As for Oliveira, a guy that's been suspended in the past for a domestic violence incident, not really anything to write home about there for San Diego. The big deal, the one that came across the wire yesterday morning, which winds up being really the only big deal at this stage of the game, the Indians pick up Andrew Miller for Clint Frazier, Justus Sheffield, J.P. Feiereisen, and then also Ben Heller. Huge deal for the Indians. Biggest need for the Indians as it stood a couple days ago was the bullpen. They've got a power lefty who doesn't have bad platoon splits against righties either. He's a guy that they can use in relief aid capacity. Now you've got Miller along with Cody Allen. If they were able to add another piece, and maybe Brian Shaw is that piece. I'm not really high on Brian Shaw, but they kind of have a quasi big three out there in the bullpen, along with, I'm going to say, the best starting rotation in baseball. You could say that I'm a little bit biased because I am an Indians fan, but you know, this is a rotation averaging 6 innings per start. Corey Kluber is locked in right now. Carlos Carrasco has great upside. Danny Salazar has been brilliant all year. Trevor Bauer's figured some things out with Chris Giménez. And then Josh Tomlin, a very, very good number five starter. The Indians are in prime position now, and it's really unfortunate that Jonathan Lucroy decided not to waive his no-trade clause to go to Cleveland. You know, now, we don't know all the circumstances. There was a report that the Indians weren't offering him the primary catcher job next year, and he didn't like that. I don't buy that whatsoever, because the Indians realized that Jonathan Lucroy, you know, you're not giving up a package like that for Lucroy to catch 2 days a week and play first the rest of the time. That's not the way it was going to go. The Indians were going to use and abuse Lucroy, possibly put him at first base a little bit, you know, to keep him off of the crowd. But they knew that they weren't signing him. So they would use and abuse him at catcher. He would have caught probably 125 games for next year. They'd have used Gomes in a backup role, you know, tried to play with him. If not, they may have even traded Gomes in the offseason, because he's got a reasonable extension, even though he's not really performing up to it. But I didn't believe that report at all whatsoever. But Lucroy doesn't go to the Indians. We'll see if he goes somewhere else here today. The Indians still solve their biggest need, picking up Andrew Miller. And now they can shorten games. They are your American League favorite. They should be the American League favorite. And hopefully, you know, obviously a knock on wood thing for me, I think this is the team that should win the American League pennant. We'll see how things play out. We'll see if they add any additional pieces here on Monday. They certainly could use an outfielder that could push Jose Ramirez to third, because that's going to help them in a very big way here, because then they can get Juan Uribe off the field. So we'll see if the Indians do anything else. There are some outfielders out there. Steve Pierce is out there as a rental. Josh Reddick, another one. So there are opportunities for the Indians out there. So the Yankees trade away Andrew Miller, but still pick up Tyler Clippard in exchange for Vicente Campos from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, Clippard, a guy that, you know, could probably be an impact reliever for the Yankees here going forward. But again, the Yankees now 7 games out in the division, 5.5 out of the wild card. As I've talked about several times over here on this show, they are the 4th best team in the American League East. And there's really no question about that. So, you know, it would not be in their best interest to play for, you know, a 1-game wild card where you've got a ton of variance, a ton of volatility. You're better off restocking the farm system. They did that with Frazier and Sheffield. They did that with Chapman getting Gleyber Torres from the Cubs. So, you know, I think Clippard makes some sense here, gives them a little bit of insurance for Dellin Betances. But, you know, overall, I think the Yankees have handled this trade deadline exactly the way that they should have. And I give them a lot of credit for that, because I know it's tough to wave the white flag on the season, but it's precisely what they needed to do. Cardinals pick up Zach Duke in exchange for Charlie Tilson. A little under the radar move here, but I really like this for St. Louis. I still think St. Louis makes the playoffs. They'll probably do it as the wild card. I don't think they have any chance at catching the Cubs, who have a 7.5 game lead. But I like this move a lot for St. Louis. They've got the offense to compete. I don't know what their pitching situation is going to look like by the time we roll around to the playoffs. But if you're looking for a team on the outskirts here, maybe St. Louis is one that you can look at from a future standpoint. They'll get Johnny Peralta back here soon. We'll see how they play out that whole thing with him and Aledmys Diaz. They've got, you know, some outfield pieces that can hit younger guys. Carlos Martinez has been brilliant this year. Adam Wainwright's been fantastic of late. St. Louis is an interesting team to face in a best of five series. Again, when you talk about playing the futures market, you're not necessarily looking to pick the winner. You're looking to guarantee profit. You do that by picking a team that can win you at least one series, or at the very least can get there and not be a huge underdog in the division series. For me, I think St. Louis is a team where you can get a little bit of value on them here, you know, moving forward. Now, because of name recognition, they're not going to have the value price as somebody like a Miami, you know, or like a Pittsburgh, you know, those other teams on the outskirts or those teams in the wild card chase. But I do feel like if you're looking at a team, you know, that can beat one of these division champions, of course, they'd probably have to go and play the Cubs, which would be very interesting for St. Louis. But I feel like the Cardinals are a team that you could take a stab on. And we'll see if they do anything else here today. I would say probably not. I think that's about the only move that they're going to make. Wade Miley goes to Baltimore from Seattle. This move doesn't change anything for me. I think Boston and Toronto are the two teams that you look at in the American League East. I think Baltimore is going to fall off the pace here. They just don't have the starting pitching it takes to compete. You know, they're going to start playing a lot of division games in September. Now, Boston's not a great pitching team, but they're out there looking at Chris Sale. They're out there looking at some impact types of moves. I like what Toronto's done here so far, picking up Melvin Upton. So I think Baltimore probably finishes third there in the American League East. They have a shot, of course, to get into the wild card game. I think Detroit falls off the pace here some in the Central. But you know, for Baltimore, Wade Miley just it doesn't do much for me. It helps because he's a competent major league pitcher. But in a general sense, it doesn't really move the needle much for me here at all. So in terms of looking at other possible teams that could come across the wire here today, and there certainly are a lot of them, it looks like Jay Bruce probably going to the New York Mets does anything for me. Not particularly. You have a Mets outfield that's going to be really disastrous the rest of the way. Yoenis Cespedes is banged up a little bit. Noah Syndergaard, second lowest average fastball velocity of the year for him yesterday. Granted, it was still 97.8 miles per hour, so he's still able to reach back. But you know, coming off of the game where he had the velocity drop a couple starts ago, second lowest average fastball velocity yesterday, big time problems for the Mets right now. And you can probably make a case that they certainly overachieved in the second half last year. So Syndergaard banged up, Steven Matz, we know he's dealing with a bone spur as well. Outfield situation is bad. The Mets are in some fairly dire straits here. Jay Bruce is a guy that helps them offensively. He is a negative defensively. I don't think he's as bad as the metrics are suggesting this year, but he's certainly not an average or above average fielder. So that doesn't really help the Mets a whole lot defensively. I think the Mets are a team you can look to play some overs with here the rest of the way and probably look to fade them as big favorites because, you know, you're going to run into spots where DeGrom and Syndergaard and Matz, you know, have some bad batted ball luck because the outfield just isn't very good there for the Mets. Chris Sale, a lot of talk about him. Will he go? Will he stay? The Dodgers reportedly in the mix. Boston reportedly in the mix. Both have what it takes to get Chris Sale. Now, the Dodgers could give up Julio Urias to do it, possibly Jose De Leon as well. I would think Jock Peterson would be an attractive guy for the White Sox. The Dodgers do have the system depth and the mentality to go out and get a guy like Chris Sale. They've also been in the market for Chris Archer from Tampa Bay. Archer, you know, having a bit of a tough season, but he would be a great addition, an impact type of pitcher. Boston, I don't think that Tampa Bay would trade within the division with Archer, but Boston's certainly a player for Chris Sale here. They have the system to do it as well. Moncada would be the guy that the White Sox would probably be looking at as the centerpiece. Ben Tendi is another guy, an outfielder that they drafted last year. So Boston has the prospect pieces as well. The White Sox are listening. I mean, obviously Chris Sale, you know, kind of lost some favor there in the clubhouse because, you know, he cut up those jerseys and he's been kind of a thorn in the side there a little bit as well with, you know, the whole Adam LaRoche and his son Drake type of thing. So the White Sox are open to moving Chris Sale. And if Sale goes, he's going to get a massive return. Especially when you look at the fact that the Indians gave up, you know, two of their top 10 prospects, including their number one overall prospect, Andrew Miller. What does that set the market at for Sale? It sets it extremely, extremely high. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Chris Sale does end up going today. Texas Rangers, John Daniels is always very, very active here at the trade deadline. They've gotten things back on track because they're starting to hit the ball again. They're up 6 on Houston in the West. Texas is, you know, a team that always goes for it here at the deadline. They've done a really good job building up their system. Of course, they got Cole Hamels last year, gave up Jorge Alfaro, also gave up Nick Williams in that deal. But they still have some pieces left in the pipeline, and if they can find a team that wants to take on Joey Gallo, Gallo, a third baseman slash outfielder, tremendous raw power, some of the best raw power in the minor leagues, does strike out a ton. But there's a team out there, probably a sabermetrically minded team, that would look to take Joey Gallo. So we'll see if that happens. And of course, you know, Texas also has to find the right fit in terms of an impact player for their team. I don't know who that is. I don't know if they're barking up the Sale tree. I don't know if they're barking up the Archer tree. Of course, they've been in the mix for Jonathan Lucroy, who'd be a very good fit in Texas. So lots of things still going on, lots of situations to keep an eye on. Now, from a handicapping standpoint, what does it all mean? Well, you know, as I talked about my picks analysis piece yesterday, I thought it was a great opportunity to go against the New York Yankees. Tampa Bay does win that game 5-3 with Blake Snell picking up the win. And the big thing there for me was the Yankees had traded Andrew Miller in the morning. And that was a clear sign that they were waving the white flag, that they were throwing in the towel on this season. Now, they go and pick up Clippard. You know, maybe that kind of gives the team a little bit of a boost in that, you know, hey, well, we capitalized on Andrew Miller, but we also got some bullpen help in the process. For me, I don't really know if that's the case. Now, there are a lot of concerns with the Mets here today. You've got Logan Verrett on the mound for them, CC Sabathia for the Yankees. Lots of worries in this game from a Mets standpoint. The Mets don't have left-handed pitching. They have that cluster F in the outfield that I already referred to. Verrett is a swing guy, you know, not really a guy that you look for, you know, really good starts from. But I still feel like the Mets are in a better position here in this game and also throughout this series. Because, you know, perception of the Yankees, and Carlos Beltran could still be on the move today as well, is that they have, you know, officially called it for this year. And that has a ripple effect through the clubhouse. You've got a lot of veteran guys on this team, you know, that aren't used to being in this position. The franchise in and of itself is not used to being in this position. I think Joe Girardi is a very good manager, but I don't know how much he can do here in order to set things in a positive direction. So I do like the Mets tonight. They need this win. They need wins in this series. They need all the wins that they can get because they're on the outside looking in terms of the wild card pitcher and, of course, 6.5 out in the division. So I do like the Mets tonight with Verrett. I know it's a tough thing to go against Sabathia facing a lineup that struggles against lefties, but this is a situational play. Also, I think that, you know, this is a spot where the Mets are just, you know, a little bit better of a team, even with all the problems that they have right now. Another game I want to touch on here, Kansas City and Tampa Bay. Now, of course, we've got the trade discussions about Chris Archer. So if Chris Archer goes, this game's obviously going to look significantly different because Archer going up against Danny Duffy here in this one. And, you know, it's tricky because you've got this Tampa Bay team that hits lefties really well, but some of the guys that hit lefties very well out there on the trade market, Steve Pierce being the predominant one, Brandon Guyer is maybe another team or player that teams are looking at who, you know, really mauls left-handed pitching and he's a decent outfielder. So Tampa Bay could end up losing some of their guys here before the deadline that hit lefties really well. And they could also wind up losing Archer as well if they find the right deal. If they're going to get a Urias or a De Leon or, you know, some kind of thing like that, maybe Archer does go. So a lot to look at for this game. For me, I like Tampa Bay a lot in this spot, assuming their team stays together. So wait until after the 4 o'clock hour to play this one, probably about 4:30 or 5 until we know that all the trades have been processed and have gone through. But I do like Tampa Bay here. The Royals are in free fall mode. Tampa Bay playing a little bit better here of late. Archer, you know, when you're Chris Archer, you had success and you're having a down year, you're not going to mail in any start. So you know that you're going to get the best that Chris Archer has to offer on a daily basis. It's not like some of these other teams where they're selling and some of their veteran starters kind of, you know, kind of take the day off a little bit. Archer's not going to do that. So I think Tampa Bay has some value here tonight, assuming, again, as I said, that most of Tampa Bay is still intact going into tonight's game. Boston and Seattle. You've got Seattle here, minus 110, slight home favorite. This is a really tricky spot here for the Mariners. They played last night, Sunday Night Baseball, against the Chicago Cubs. The game went 12 innings after a Seattle blown save in the ninth, and then the Mariners lost on a walk-off suicide squeeze. So this is a very tricky spot for Seattle because they wrap up an eight-game road trip with a devastating loss, make that long flight back to SeaTac. Now they take on a Boston team that, you know, has been struggling quite a bit here of late. And now it's a three-horse race in the American League East. They're a game and a half out. They have the wild card spot right now, but only by a game over Detroit. Boston needs to get this thing together. Now, the tough thing is that Eduardo Rodriguez is going for the Red Sox. But Eduardo Rodriguez has actually pitched pretty well here over his last three starts. Again, you talk about recency bias. You talk about the way that the public actually handicaps. You talk about the way that odds pickers set line. And look, Eduardo Rodriguez's year-to-date numbers are terrible. But he's gotten better here of late. Now, it is a small sample size, but a lot of people have some biases about him, have some preconceived notions. He's only given up six runs in his last 17 and two-thirds innings. Gave up nine runs in his June 27th start. That'll kill an ERA for a long time. And if you've got somebody that's just looking at the traditional metrics, like a lot of odds makers are, like a lot of public bettors are, that's where you tend to find some value. So I think Eduardo Rodriguez is really mispriced here in this game. Seattle, I don't think that they really have a whole lot that they can do here from a trade deadline standpoint. James Paxton is solid, but he's not great. Taking on a Boston lineup that is the best in baseball against lefties, this game is really mispriced to me. I really feel like, A, Boston should be favored, and I don't think it would surprise me if they close a favorite. And B, you know, the situational spot for Seattle is so bad, and this number hasn't really moved since the overnight line. So I feel like in this particular spot here, you know, you're getting a really good value on the Boston Red Sox. I think that's something that you want to take advantage of here tonight. That would probably be my strongest play of the night, would be the Boston Red Sox. We'll see, you know, if that one does happen to come through. I want to talk a little bit here in some general terms again about what the trade deadline means moving forward for teams. Obviously today is a little bit difficult. You know, you're losing teammates, you're losing friends, you know, the players' wives all kind of, you know, form a sisterhood and it's tough to see them go. And in some cases you've also got players that, you know, will now be away from their families for a little while. You know, maybe if they're a rental player, they spend 2 months away from their families. You know, they don't want to uproot everybody when they don't know what free agency is going to hold. Of course, you don't really have the school year problems in baseball that you have with basketball and hockey with the trade deadline. And you know what, to be honest with you, I think one of the things that Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL need to do is they need to give everybody the day off for the trade deadline. Just so many distractions, so many hardships, you know, players leaving friends, players leaving cities they've played in for a long time, situations with families. It needs to be a day where those leagues are dark. I mean, obviously, it doesn't need to be a thing in the NFL, but in the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, where you have this daily grind, this needs to be a day off for the players. That's something I would absolutely like to see the commissioners of all three of those leagues do. But in any event, you know, you have these players. Some of them get a little bit of a jolt because they go from, you know, a bad situation or a rebuilding situation to a team that's contending, and that's something that, you know, can be really fun. On the other hand, when you're a player like that, you come with extra expectations. You know, this team that's in the playoff hunt has isolated you to go out and get you to be that missing piece that they need. Sometimes players don't really thrive in that type of situation. I mean, we saw it with Johnny Cueto last year. Now, Cueto got better as the playoffs went on, but he was not good for the Royals in the regular season at all whatsoever. This is a guy that had spent his entire career with the Cincinnati Reds, had been a very, very good pitcher, and everybody thought going to Kansas City, hey, look, this is a guy that's really thrived with low BABIPs throughout his career. Going to Kansas City, where they've got an elite-level defense, this is a home run. Cueto was not a home run during the regular season for the Royals. They really benefited because the American League Central was not a good division last year. They never got tested in the division, wound up making it to the playoffs and not really having too many issues there either. But, you know, again, we see these situations, and if we get some of these players, you know, I mean, you can Wade Miley, he's bounced around a little bit already. Tyler Clippard, he's bounced around. You know, is Andrew Miller going to go to the Indians and struggle? Because this is the piece that, you know, everybody in Cleveland, from the front office to the field to the stands to the beat writers to everybody, this is the player that the Indians are saying, look, this is our missing piece. This is our guy to take us to the promised land. Now, you can make the argument that he's used to expectations. He pitches in high leverage. He's been in Boston. He's been in New York. You know, so you can make the argument that this is a guy that should be immune to that type of situation, but maybe not. You know, every situation is unique. Every situation is different. And just because a team goes out and acquires a player, impact or not, doesn't mean that he's going to have a tangible impact. Now, Andrew Miller is going to, because he's pitching in high leverage. He'll have a tangible impact, whether it's good or bad. It remains to be seen. Of course, you would think with his track record, it should be good. But take Jonathan Lucroy. So let's say Jonathan Lucroy goes to the Rangers or the Mets. He gets thrown right into a pennant race, something he's not really experienced in his career. You know, not only does he have to worry about hitting, but he also has to worry about catching the pitching staff in these high-pressure situations. That's not a given. You know, that's not a given at all. Chris Sale, a guy that's never really pitched in a playoff chase. A guy that's never really pitched in a pennant race on a team that has a legitimate shot to win a World Series. If he goes to Boston or the Dodgers or the Rangers or some kind of thing like that, you know, what does he become? You know, what happens with him? Well, we saw Cole Hamels pitch pretty well for the Rangers down the stretch, but he'd been through it before with Philadelphia. So, you know, just because teams make some of these deals, they don't always work out. And, you know, it's just one of those situations where when you're looking at it from a handicapping standpoint, you know, you don't automatically want to buy. You don't automatically want to sell. You don't want to run to the futures market and put your money down. You don't want to fade that team by playing the team below it in the division or something like that. You want to take some time. You want to look around. You want to make sure of the particular situation. You want to have perspective about all this. And, you know, sometimes it's tough when you get another starting pitcher, and it's tricky because there haven't been a whole lot of starting pitchers available in the market here. But it takes time to develop that rapport with a catcher. It takes time to learn the hitters. You know, the relievers don't have to worry about that as much. So if we do start to see some starters get moved around here a little bit today, then, you know, that's something I can address on future shows, particularly when those guys, you know, are going out there and pitching. But, you know, again, don't automatically assume that every trade deadline maneuver is going to work out, because a lot of them don't, or a lot of them don't have that much tangible impact. You're talking about a 2-month sample size, you know? So are you talking about a player that adds, you know, 0.5 wins above replacement player, 1 win above replacement player, 2 wins above replacement player? You know, it all depends. So you want to evaluate each situation on a case-by-case basis. I'll help you do that here throughout the week. But with just 8 games on the card today, focus a lot more on some of this trade deadline stuff than on the games. Of course, you can check out my picks analysis piece over at bangthebook.com. As far as the rest of the week goes, looking to have Brad Powers of bradpowersports.com on Tuesday's show. Of course, Wes Reynolds on Wednesday, Jordan Bianchi on Thursday. We'll have Aaron Saunders on Friday this week. We're pre-recording the segment there on Thursday for the ACC. So we'll have that coming up on Friday's show. Want to try and get you some NFL insight here this week as well. Been in talk with Cole Ryan. We're trying to get some things organized for when we'll be doing some division preview stuff. We'll be bringing back the Super Contest segment as well this year. So a lot of good things coming your way here in the month of August at bangthebook.com and also here on Bang the Book Radio. So, you know, I will keep you posted throughout the week as to our schedule, as to our guests, but you can expect 4 editions of Bang the Book Radio, the hour-long broadcast coming up here for the rest of the week. So that'll do it for me. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Make sure that you're up to date with the latest on the trade deadline. Also, keep in mind those futures prices. Watch the betting market, everything that you need to do. It's very important here this time of year in Major League Baseball. So thanks again for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the batter's box.